Hey, Last Logs crew. So, we're getting towards the end of our seventh season. What? I know. How did this even happen? One, how did this podcast even get off the ground? And two, how on earth have I managed to keep it above ground? Well, of course, it has a lot to do with you, silly. My Last Logs listeners, your amazing words of encouragement mixed with my incredibly inspirational guests. Without all of that, this is dead and buried 6 feet under. So thank you guys. Much appreciation to you all. Now listen, I'm going to get boring and serious, and I'm going to be 100% transparent with you now. It is far more work than I ever thought it would be back when I started this little mission. As much as I try to schedule my time sensibly, it is so freaking time consuming. The podcast is by no means any kind of moneymaker, so I can't justify paying someone out of pocket to take over areas like editing or social media stuff. I would love for it to bring in some cash so I can gain a little kickback for the amount of time poured into it, but I guess we'll see. If anyone has any wonderful ideas that might help me out, shoot me a message. I'd love to hear from you. Now, you've heard me talk about the Last Logs mentoring program, and my guest today was one of our 2023 mentors. I first interviewed makeup artist Brian Sipe about his and Maria Sandoval's work on The Mandalorian in season 1, episode 4. I thought I'd best get Brian on the show solo to find out more about his career journey, and he shares his mentoring process with me as well. All I have to say is those mentees are a lucky bunch. You can see Brian's work not only in The Mandalorian, but also Guardians of the Galaxy 2, The Suicide Squad, Captain Marvel, and the X-Men movies. Okay, enough of me yabbering. My name is Jamie Lee, and this is the Last Looks podcast, a show where I catch up with makeup artists and hairstylists working in the film and TV industries around the world. And today on the show, we're hearing from makeup artist Brian Sipe. On with the show.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Doing a job using temporary tattoos? Try Hookup Tattoo's Matte Sealer and Tattoo Remover Wipes. The sealer can be applied directly to the tattoo with a brush or sponge. When applied in layers, you can achieve the perfect satin or matte finish for the most realistic tattoo look. The sealer can be used for not only tattoos, but also on top of your prosthetic appliances for the perfect finish. Our temporary tattoo remover wipes are dermatologist tested and approved, so they are safe for all skin types. Hand to your actor at the end of the night with confidence that they will provide the perfect cleanup. They will also take off alcohol paints, PAX paints, and tattoo cover paints. Hookup Tattoos has a retail line of over 100 tattoos and provides custom tattoo services. Proudly serving the film and television industry for 10 years. Can be found at hookuptattoos.com or your local professional beauty shop. Temporary Tattoos by Hookup Tattoos, because this relationship is not permanent.
And now, our feature presentation.
Pictures up.
Last Looks. Rolling.
And action.
Welcome back to the Last Looks podcast, Brian.
Hi, yeah, thanks for having me back on.
Of course. Hey, okay, so this is where our story begins. I want you to finish this sentence for me, okay?
Oh, okay, Mad Libs, huh?
Once upon a time, there was a little boy named Brian, and when he grew up, he wanted to be...
A stuntman.
A stuntman.
Yeah, I did.
Awesome. And how did you know that being a stuntman was a thing?
You know, I think it was the movie Hooper.
Okay.
Burt Reynolds' movie back in the 70s. And I remember watching that when I was a kid and wanted to fall off buildings and, you know,
yeah.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
And so when did that fade away? Or were you a stuntman at some point? I don't know.
In my own head, many times. I used to, like, me and a friend, we used to, you know, play around with, like, you know, roll off my deck or the roof of the house or something like that. And and then, you know, I think it started to kibosh when I realized that, like, I'm kind of afraid of heights. Standing at the edge of a cliff is not that fun. No, I think then I discovered makeup around that time, you know, watching VHS rentals of horror movies, and always kind of watched that kind of stuff, Godzilla, Frankenstein movies, you know, Saturday cinema.
Yeah.
that kind of stuff. And I was always too interested in like magic.
Okay.
Not the the one piece jumpsuit sequence magic, but you know, sleight of hand kind of stuff.
That's disappointing.
Just stuff.
Being so fussy with his magic.
Yeah. But you know, that like the sleight of hand and just, you know, fooling people. And I guess makeup kind of puts that all together.
So how do we figure out that makeup is a line of work and to kind of start working towards that?
I figured out that makeup was a real thing after watching The Thing, the remake, John Carpenter's remake of The Thing. I watched it several times, again, on rental, VHS. And this was probably 1981, 82, I think, when that came out. And so, you know, incessantly, I've watched it. I think I kept it late several times. You get late fees. And
the folks are like, oh, my God, he's obsessed with this weird movie.
And, of course, there was no rewind charges. But my father traveled for work, and he was going through an airport one day, and he saw at one of the magazine stands an issue of Cinema Fantastique, one with Rob Bottin on the cover. He picked it up because he knew I was watching that movie like crazy. So in that, I mean, I remember just devouring that, and there were these little drawings within the article talking about The Thing. These little drawings done by an artist, I think his name was Mike Plug, and he was kind of like the storyboard artist, I think, for the show or for Rob. But he did like these little, he did these little diagrams on like how like the effect was going to work, you know, like when the head was like stretching and falling off the table. It was like a little drawing of like two guys holding this, and then, you know, one guy pushing the head out on sticks. And for some reason, like that made me think, oh, that's a job. Somebody's doing that. Somebody's making that head grow out there.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of all of a sudden when it all just kind of cemented in my head, I guess.
And so going through high school and everything, were you like, when did you start actually playing around with makeup or sculpture or whatever it was that you started with?
Yeah, I think that must have been like my sophomore, junior year is when I really just kind of started to, you know, then I found, you know, Fangoria magazine. I think I ordered the Tom Savini's book, Grand Illusions, you know, out of there, you know, going to the library and checking out Richard Corson's edition 5, his stage theater makeup book. And Lee Bagan, he was the, I think he was the head of makeup at NBC for many years.
Yeah.
He put out a book and they all kind of chronicled like how to start specialty makeup and doing prosthetics. So, I mean, armed with those books, you know, I just started teaching myself sculpting in, you know, in the garage.
So what, just, this sounds so non-American, but what's junior, sophomore, what is that? Where, like, what kind of age is that?
So that's maybe 15, 16.
Okay. Okay, cool.
And then through that, like, I met a guy near me, a guy named Mike Prosper. He was interested in the same things, and so we would kind of meet up and, you know, here, old, I just got some alginate. Let's throw some on my face and you throw it on my face. I'll put it on yours. Let's do a life cast. And, you know.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in a little city outside of Portland called Hillsboro. Yeah, it's about maybe 20 minutes or 20 miles outside of Portland, kind of going towards the coast.
So everything that you kind of needed within reason, you could go out and find somewhere?
I mean, that's cool. To a point.
Yeah.
I tracked down, like in my local area, I tracked down like a dental supply house where they sold me alginate and, you know, teeth trays so I can make teeth casts. Another medical supply place that I was able to get plaster bandages at. And then, you know, I used crappy plastilina clay for sculpting. Yeah. I mean, you know, just was able to, just suss and sort out what I could.
Must have been great when you got the proper sculpting clay. You would have been like, oh,
I know. Yeah. It doesn't feel like butter anymore.
That's awesome. I think sometimes it's good to start with the more difficult item and then move on to the real thing.
Yeah. 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 Because then it's like luxury all after that. It's funny.
Yeah.
Even just telling you this story right now, I was just thinking like, wow, I was actually maybe kind of crazy for me to be as like a 16-year-old, like sourcing out that, like, well, how did I even know to call some of these places?
Yeah. I was like, the dental supply place must have been like, what is this kid up to?
Yeah. And then I explained it to him. They'd be like looking at me cross-eyed like, okay, just don't breathe it.
Like, but what are you really doing?
Yeah.
That's so cool. So at that point, like, you're in high school and you're probably, I mean, you know, the school is probably like, Brian, what are you going to do with your life? And your parents are probably thinking the same thing. So Did you have an idea of what could happen after high school to keep this going?
High school, I don't know if they really cared. I mean, it was kind of like a farming town. Yeah. And I didn't play sports. You know, I mean, like all those people, you know, they were all getting scholarships and getting ready to do their thing, you know, go off, go to school, become the college hero, and then come back and work in dad's hardware store. Our family has always had some kind of a business, a restaurant usually.
Yeah.
And so I grew up in that. And I mean, I worked all through high school.
Plus, yeah.
Since I was 11, I've been working in a family restaurant. And so it was that. And I would make money and, you know, spend my time on the weekends just playing with this stuff. And my folks, my dad really wanted me to get into computers.
Yeah.
He worked for one of the first companies that started making home computers, personal computers. And he knew that, you know, he's like, this is going to be the way of the future.
Yeah.
I remember we had a home computer and it was literally the size of a desk. You know, like an office desk. It was ridiculous. But it had like the big, like 9-inch floppy disks, whatever they were, And I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I sat there and I would read books and I would try to do these tutorials and I'd fall asleep literally at the keyboard and just couldn't do it. And I don't know. I somehow convinced them that this was going to be a great path.
Well, I mean, if they're seeing that you're doing it every weekend and being like super just into it, going out, getting your own stuff, like, you know, pretty consistently, I mean, a parent's got to figure it out at some point that, okay, I think this is what this makes him happy. He should probably do that.
I mean, my dad was the kind of guy, you know, we lived on 4 acres of a little family farm. And so, you know, Saturday mornings he'd get me up at 5 a.m. to go help, you know, feed the cows or, you know, do something, garden, rototill the garden. I mean, I do, you know, thank them for all of that. That with my mom in the restaurant, my dad farming, and I think that built the platform of my work ethic.
Yeah, I was going to say, you must have a pretty strong work ethic.
Yeah, I mean, I do. But my dad also, we had like in our barn, we had a workshop, a little woodworking workshop and, you know, all kinds of everything. So, you know, I'd sit there and watch him build stuff and then I'd build stuff. And, you know, so that also kind of sparked that creative nature as far as, you know, MacGyvering stuff together or, you know, being able to spatially look at something and figure out how to build it.
Yeah.
I guess the testing grounds was one time in the back of Fangoria magazine, there was an ad for like a week-long class in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy, his name was Bert Roth. I think he ran ABC for a bit. He was going to do like a week-long class in his apartment in New York. You know, I think it was like $1,000 or something like that, $800 some dollars. And so I signed up, had to talk with my folks and, you know, they kind of figured maybe this will be a good, you know, bang for the buck. It's not that much. Figure out this is really what you like. And we had family friends that lived in, you know, North Jersey. So I stayed with them and took the bus in. It's funny, as a 17 or 18 year old, taking the bus into New York in 1982, 83, Port Authority, getting dropped off at Port Authority at 42nd Street, which was, you know, way before Disney bought it all up and cleaned it up. It was a real dodgy area back then. I thought, like, wow.
Yeah, I've heard a bit about New York and how dodgy some areas were in the 80s and how much has changed.
I think about that now, and like, I am walking through, you know, like these areas. I was like, oof.
Yeah.
It's like, what was it? It was like the cross, you know, it's like going up to King's Cross in Sydney. But yeah, I did that for a weekend and, you know, we learned how to do a ball cap, learned how to like lay a beard and a mustache and some stuff. And and that excited me even more.
You're like, okay, the spark turned into fire and you're like, okay. Let's
do
this.
It's been burning ever since.
So how did you get into your first, like, did you start off on set or did you start off in a workshop? Like how did you start, I guess, working?
I guess after I graduated high school, a couple of years of just kind of banging around, you know, hometown, there was an ad. I guess I got to thank Fangoria for a lot of this career choice. There was an ad in Fangoria for a makeup school that was opening in Los Angeles. And so I called. I think I was actually the very first person to call from the ad and first person to sign up and packed up my little car and drove down to LA to go to this makeup school. I had a family member who lived out in La Puente. So I stayed there. It was like 5 months. And, you know, it was, took you through a beauty and platform theater and then movie, you know, film and TV and like the quote unquote special effects section, you know, which I think I actually helped develop for him. But, you know, it was a good base knowledge and it got me to LA.
Yeah.
And then, you know, from there, I just started meet other people in the other classes and then you start building your, you know, your tribe, your world around you. And I think when the real education happens, you know, when you're using your downtime, working in the garage, playing, sculpting, painting, doing whatever, experimenting. Let's see. In America here, we had like this, this magazine called Dramalogue.
Okay.
And in the back of that, they would kind of list upcoming productions.
Okay.
And it would range anything from a student production to, you know, a real production. We would always send off our resumes and cards and, you know, try and get work that way. I think that's how I got, I think it's on my IMDb, my first credit, Cannibal Hookers. and so, you know, that's a badge of honor. I leave it on there just because it's funny. Yeah, I think that, you know, I think that was one of the first things. You just kind of like, you start chasing it.
This is amazing. So the stuff that gets mad, it blows my mind.
Well, the funny thing was that we it was me and my roommate at the time, Bill Barsdorf. And, you know, we're making it. It was supposed to be just like a couple of days, you know, 2 days shoot, like a weekend.
Yeah.
So we go and we go to this location in Glendale. It's like this really cool old house. And, you know, it's like a weird little mansion thing. But it's like, you know, like nobody lives there. It's empty and I don't know, foreclosed on. I mean, who knows what?
Yeah.
We just kind of take it over and they're filming in there. And, you know, you can kind of walk around and in this house, I mean, there's like, oh, look, here's the dungeon room. And, oh, look, here's the, you know, so I don't know whose this house was. And then,
we're actually there's like, some interesting locations around.
We start like talking to some of the actors and we're like, oh, yeah. And my roommate's talking to this one woman and she was like, oh, yes, you guys are working. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. So, you know, how'd you get involved with this? And she's like, oh, yeah, Mark over there, he brought me in. And she's like, we all do porn together. And we're like, oh, okay. I guess this was, I think it was maybe funded by porn money, but it was a non-porn movie. But it, and it was, I don't know. It was.
They were trying to make the crossover.
They were trying to cross over. They were trying to go see. Legit. Yeah. I don't know.
They wanted to change genre.
Yeah. And but then like the second day, like about 10 a.m. on the second day, cops roll up. Okay. Hey, what are you doing here? and I was standing out there and I'm like, negative. Movie? And they're like, no, you're not. I'm like, well, yeah, here, go talk to them. Like, I'm not in charge. We walk inside, and the director, like, just disappeared. He was, like, off in the vapor, and the producers, everybody just started, like, skedaddling. And then, like, a bunch of us were just standing around, like, what the hell's going on? So apparently, we had no permission to be there. We had. It's out there somewhere. It's got an IMDb credit. That's how I was able to pull it.
So it made it. It finally got finished. The cops didn't completely stop it from happening.
I mean, I didn't even go back telling them how they finished it. I was like, yeah, no, I'm good.
That's awesome. So did you end up working in different shops or were you normally just like working for yourself and creating your pieces and all that type of thing? Or like how did you?
Yeah. Well, right after makeup school, I didn't do anything. You know, you're going through the motions of sending off resumes and doing what you can. And the shops were all, you know, they were all happening, but they were, you know, there were a few of the big shops, obviously, you know, Rick's and Stan's and everything. The teacher at the makeup school, like, has been approached by a company in Orange County called Dynamation. And we used to make life-size robotic or animatronic dinosaurs for museums.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. And so I went down and worked for them for a few years and, you know, flew around the world kind of setting up these exhibits or repairing the dinosaurs. And, you know, that was a lot of fun. But then after a while, we all just, you know, me and a bunch of the same people from the makeup school that we'd all gone to, we were all at one point just like, what the hell? You know, didn't we all come here to do makeup? What are we doing this for? And then we started to slowly transition to Hollywood. My roommate, Bill, he was the first one to do it. He's like, you know, fuck it. And went off and he, you know, he got a job at Beekler's. And then from there, he went to work at Steve Johnson's at XFX. And then so I would go up on the weekends and just hang out and work for free or whenever I was available. I would just do that. And, you know, Steve would, you know, all of a sudden he'd be like, here, why don't you do this? Build this gag for a Monsters TV show or do something. And then one day it was just like, so, hey, have you ever run Foam Latex? And I said, nope. And he's like, okay, well, I'll get 5 gallons of foam latex. I'll go get a bunch of just generic molds. I'll just have you run them for a week. Let's see how you do. And then did that. And he's like, okay, looks like you got a hang of it. Do you want a job?
Nice.
And so I was like, yeah, sure. I think that first job, I think I was making like $75 a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was for a film called Highway to Hell with Chad Loeb and Christy Swanson, but Patrick Berrigan.
That's very cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and it just keeps going, and you just keep working on different productions. Yep. And
yep, I stayed with Steve's for about a year and a half until, or more than that, I think, and until, you know, kind of work kind of slowed down, and, you know, then that's when you kind of start, you know, shop jumping. And
then at what point do you make that transition to be on set kind of in the union and stuff? Because that is something that some people don't make that move. So what kind of...
Yeah. Well, I was lucky enough to, like, I would be the person that I could, like, build. I could help build the gags or build the effect and then take it to set. But I was, I couldn't apply some makeup things, you know, unless it was on a non-union, which, you know, there were a lot of big non-union movies being made back then, especially horror.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You know, shop jumping. I made my way over to Greg Canham's shop, which then became Captive Audience, owned by Keith Vanderlaan, and worked on a few shows there. And then, you know, along came Big Mama's House.
Yeah.
And that was the one that got me in on the union, because we were, at that time, everybody was developing silicone prosthetics. Everybody kind of had like their own versions. But that shop there, you know, between Greg and again Wes Wofford, I helped with some molding. You know, we were able to come up with a way to create really good overlapping silicone prosthetics, really the brainchild of Wes, and mostly Wes, and then, you know, with some input from Greg. And, you know, I was one of the few people that could, you know, that had, you know, time under my belt applying them and playing with it. So that was kind of the key, you know, special skills waiver to get me in on the union.
Right, right. So, yeah, because not only being able to apply them, but then like look after it throughout the day and understand how to fix stuff
was all before we, you know, we were doing latex pieces. It was kind of like a latex skin with a tin silicone, and, you know, not the Platsil and bulkhead material that we use today. At that time, you know, nobody else was doing it like we were, or even like they are today. So yeah, that's what really got me my leg in.
That's awesome. Yeah. And so once in the union, did that feel like things shifted a little bit for you, or not so much? Did it kind of continue on the same path, or did it?
Yeah, it just kind of, I mean, obviously it's going to shift in a way that I'm going to have this conversation, you know, a conversation with every one of the mentees that I have, you know, that the union itself, I mean, it doesn't find you jobs. It protects you. It protects a certain standard. And really, that's all about it. And because of the nature of that, you are, you know, you're afforded the opportunity to work on certain projects. So, you know,
That wall kind of comes down, that you can work on things that you wouldn't be able to.
Right. Otherwise. Because, you know, but I mean, that's not even today, that's not even, not even a true statement anymore, because, you know, you can get waivers for people, you know, I don't know if this is the place to roll into that other part of the conversation, but
why not?
But, you know, for the mentees, I mean, you know, a lot of them expressed interest in the union, and you know, whenever I hear people talk about that these days, and it really kind of started with these folks, the mentees, that it was, all right, take that out of view, because that's not the goal. The goal for me is to, you know, I guess, actually, you might have a little backstory before we go into the whole the mentorship, since it's your program.
Yeah. So for anyone that isn't aware, Last Looks Podcast did like a mentorship program this year, and I reached out to past guests because I have so many incredible, talented, inspiring people that I've spoken to. And I was just like, how could we get some of our more of our newcomers in conversation with some of these people. So set up the mentorship program, reached out to Brian, asked him if he'd be interested. I got a very positive response, which was awesome. And like some type of incredibly crazy man, he took on 10 mentees. I asked him to take on one. And you went for 10, which was amazing. And from what I gather through social media, all 10 of them are incredibly stoked and happy that they were paired up with you, and you guys have done some great stuff. So when Brian is referring to his mentees through this conversation, I'm assuming he's talking about those 10 lucky folks.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I mean, I guess taking on 10, I figured if I was going to have a conversation with one person,
yeah,
I could have the same conversation with a few.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then I think what I at first I thought it was just going to be, I was thinking four.
Yeah. You remember this.
four. That would be a lot. That'd be, you know, and then looking at your criteria for the mentorship was, you know, to have 4 1-hour conversations with them over a period of time, you know, to help kind of guide them. And, you know, when I looked at that, I thought, oh, okay, 1 hour, 4 times. Okay. Well, yeah, if I have a few, that's like 16 hours over the next, whatever, 6 months. I can do that.
Yeah.
And then you sent over the list of the people who were, you know, still hopeful.
Their applications.
Yep. And so, and there was quite a few. So, you know, read everybody's history and looked at their Instagrams and picked a few, you know, picked, I guess, quite a few. I just kept picking and then just kind of.
Yeah. You sent through 9 names to me, I think. Yeah. And I was just like, 9. I was like, holy shit. But then in my mind, I was just like, why not round it up to even 10? Well, and then a couple of days later, you were like, is it too late to add one more person?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm going to say, like, you know, hats off. Because I did do the 9. And then when, you know, you announced all the names, everybody. You know, well, there was one person who was like, oh, you know, she was kind of bummed that she didn't get picked and was curious as to why. And so she contacted me and I thought, okay, balls out. That's great. You know, that's someone right there showing me that she wants it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, you're in.
So, awesome.
Even 10, you know. And yeah, you know, from there, you know, having the conversation with them, you know, because you can, you know, again, you're going to say that there's only so much you can really say. And everything that we do in this business, I mean, I feel it's all tactile. And, you know, you can talk about a direction, but that, you know, even giving somebody a path can be very vague. But what is not vague is teaching somebody skills.
Yeah.
And, you know, teaching somebody skills to the point of muscle memory, you know. And so that's what I thought. I know I transformed your program a little bit, but.
Well, yeah, no, it's kind of handed over. Once I pair you guys up, it's kind of, you know, I gave you the bare minimum of what you were meant to do. And you can always do more and take it to wherever you want.
You know, everybody was really excited. You know, most of them have gone through a makeup school, and as good as a couple of the schools are that are out there, they're all on a schedule, so they're not really teaching the nuance of certain things, just the finesse, fine detail, or just like, you know, everybody gets a pat on the head and you're like, oh, you're great, you know. It's the same thing grandma and your mom says, instead of did you use your left hand to do that? What are you doing? Are you tired? I want to push them so that they know they have to do better every day.
Yeah.
No.
I can understand that as well, especially just considering the type of industry that they're about to embark
on. Yeah, you know, it's no joke.
Like, you are constantly going to be pushed to create the best. And you may think that you've done the best and someone's going to come and, you know, just go, nope, start again.
Yep.
They've changed their mind. It's all different.
Yeah. You know, and if you can't do it, there's like 20 other people behind you that will. So you need to start off on the best foot possible. So, I mean, that's kind of like going back to that union talk. Just take that out of the equation. You know, don't even think about the union. I mean, you know, we're going to be here and we're going to work together and we're all going to play around. And it's going to be like, your goal is to just be the best makeup artist you can be. Just be the best. And, you know, not think about winning an award or, you know, I want a department head or I want to do this. Just like, just be good. Just be really good. And if you are all that other stuff will find you. Or, you know, you can be wavered in and say, well, this person does this kind of a makeup really great, so we need to get her in. Okay, we'll get her, you know, however many days it would take, get her a waiver, you know. Yeah. I mean, so you can work on those big projects. You can work on these things. But again, if you're not good, I mean, nobody's going to, you know, support shit.
Bluntly. <Yeah. laughs> It's actually interesting what piqued my interest just now out of that, just to continue with, is the amount of applications that I got where people did actually write that, you know, it was, I think I asked a question of, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Yes, exactly.
I hate being asked that question, but I asked it anyway. Yeah. And there was a lot of people saying that they wanted to be head of department.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as a head of department, I was like, are you sure you want that?
You don't know what that means, do you?
You don't even know what that I mean, some of them may be able to grasp what that is, but, and it would be head of department on, you know, big films. And it's just like, okay.
There's no
do you want to spend half of your time doing administrative work? Yeah. Or like, it's just like, it's such a different beast. And I think also, I don't know if people just think that they are supposed to aim high and that's where they should be looking, when it's just like, not everybody is built to be head of department. Not everybody enjoys being head of department. Like, so why not, you know, focus more on what you enjoy doing? Yeah. And it may not be that. And that's okay. Like, that's more than okay. If you can figure out that I'm really good in a key position, like I'm the support person, I'm fucking great at it. I'm always there for my team and my head of department, and I'm, you know, amazing at organizing stuff or whatever it is. Or you really love doing crowd work because every other day you're in a different, yeah, on a different job doing completely different hair and makeup, and you can just be like a gypsy, yeah, constantly and be in and out of all these jobs working with different people, yeah, every day.
And that way it doesn't become stale.
Yeah, exactly. And if that's what you love, then there's nothing negative about that. Not everyone has to be like, I want to be the boss.
Yeah. Well, again, I think the funny thing is, you know, you hit the nail on the head. It's just like, people don't know what it means to be the boss. You know, first of all, nobody goes out to lunch with the boss. You know, probably a third of the effort that we put in is off clock, you know, that we're not being paid for, and we're at home reading scripts and doing budgets and breaking things down because they need it tomorrow. And then it's going to change again anyway. You do that, you know, three times a week. You know, there's, you know, doing design work. And, you know, I mean, I think there's so much that goes into it, and there's so much that, that, you know, it's tiresome, you know. But if you are the HOD designer type, then, you know, it also can be very rewarding. But it's a lot of work, and it's nonstop. It's not like you do your makeup and you go pull up on set behind Village and pull out your magazine and sit there and wait till you touch up your person, you know, every four takes or whatever it is. Because as soon as you're done with your makeup, somebody takes your character, and then you're off and spinning and doing meetings and more breakdowns and, you know.
And then you're also responsible for everything that goes on that screen.
Absolutely.
So if something that you didn't even touch
goes on,
is not right and happens and goes on screen. Absolutely. And that all comes down to you.
Find that the hard way.
Yeah.
But
it all lands on your head.
So, I mean, that's really, like, you know, one of the things that I'm really just kind of trying to pound into their heads, that, you know, to say, no, the goal is excellence. The goal is not to be happy with what you just did. The goal is to keep pushing yourself. Every single application gets a little bit better or a little bit faster or a little bit something. And to be hypercritical about everything, you know, you have to find something that didn't go right so that you can make the next one a little bit better. And I know that sounds, maybe it is OCD or I don't know what, but it's, I think that's kind of something you need to hone to have longevity.
Yeah. Well, it keeps you passionate, I think. It keeps you interested. Yeah. It keeps you striving for more.
Yeah. Like, or it will help define where your passion is. The weekend, I think you might have seen on social media, was I had all of the mentees, 10 plus an 11th, Brittany, who has been helping me here in my shop. I called it the churn and burn weekend. And it was, we started Friday morning and ended Monday around noon. And it was, let's go. And I taught them, you know, everything from sculpting, doing prosthetic transfers, mold making, running the pieces, application. Great. Do it again. Do it again. You know, I take that off, apply again. Went through the steps of taught everybody, like, how to use the Pache H airbrush the way I use it. You know, it was a learning curve for everybody, especially since most schools don't teach the Pache H. You know, they.
Which is funny because most artists I speak to, it's their favorite.
But everybody, for some reason, they you know, they all have that shiny silver, you know, eye water or something, but which some of them had. But so learning, you know, something new in that nature was good, fun. And, you know, it was a little study into helping everybody find out if this was something they're really into, you know, because we started at 9 a.m. on Friday. I think we went till about 10 p.m. And then the next day we started at 9. So I gave that first day, I gave him a little bit of a rest.
Yeah, I was going to say, you made it.
Then that next day.
Gave him some easy hours.
Yeah. And then the next day, Saturday, we went from 9 until 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Until 2 a.m. and then, you know, 2:30, something like that, 3, and then back again at 9. And then.
So that's a part of the burn of the churn and burn.
You know, just to kind of, you know, get people, you know, let's see who we all are after 18 hours of work and tired and hungry. And,
yeah,
you know,
got to work in a team still.
Yeah, you know, and we're all in this little small workspace and, you know, we've all just met each other. So it's like, who's going to get sick of who? And, you know, but it was it actually, you know, the group is fantastic. Everybody gelled together really well. Awesome. Nobody lost their shit. Nobody, you know, everybody stayed really positive. And you know what? They were all like just really happy to be there. So, I mean, you know, this mentorship in that way will be amazing. It'll be, you know, worth it and a lot of fun if they keep this attitude. Yeah.
And it's, I love that you're not like sugarcoating stuff.
No.
You don't even know how it can be.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, I think some people understand that deeply straight away. They just kind of click into it. And others, I think, have a completely different idea of what it's all about. And it's a rude awakening when they start doing those hours or a push like that. And they're like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah. And at the end of it, you know, we had kind of like this whole, you know, it's kind of like, you know, the journey of, you know, creating the pieces and applying. So the final that we did, which was good. I took some of it from a friend of mine, Christina Cordham, and then kind of morphed it into something else. But so we basically, I like gave everybody a set of some prosthetics to put on.
Yeah.
So then, you know, they got their partner and I said, okay, so, you know, take prosthetics, put them on, and then, you know, take your pictures. And then, so they did that. And I said, you know, and I was like, okay, great. Now I have a duplicate set of the prosthetics over here. I put names in a hat and everybody picked a name out of the hat. And the person who the name it was the person who got the prosthetic that you had just applied. So then you had to send them your pictures and then duplicate it. Like it was continuity the second day.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Did they just get pictures or did they get notes on what was
no, that's
as well?
It.
Or did they just have just to go
pictures,
visual?
Just pictures, just visual. You know, just, you know, try to keep it as, you know, because that, sometimes that's all you get is, you know, here, here's a picture.
And they can be very shitty pictures.
Shitty pictures. Or some people, some people took pictures that were just close up. So you didn't know where it was.
Like, where is that, on the body? Place? Yeah.
You know, is that an arm or is that a leg or a neck or up or down? And, you know, some people took wide shots so that they had that. So the lesson for everybody is that, like, okay, let's look back at this and see what we need to do. Make sure your pictures are all this and, you know, include information. You want to put a ruler in the picture so that you can get a, you know, a size. And then after that, after everybody kind of, you know, we did that portion of it, then it was, okay, one by one, the teams would go up and the group would critique it. Where they would go through the pictures, look at the pictures, look at what they did, look what the original one was. And it was, okay, everybody, there was nobody missed out. Like everybody had to say something, whether it be positive or negative or both. And it was interesting because they, the first couple of people who, you know, got to do it, they were, you know, very like, well, yeah, you did great. This is amazing. And, you know, well, the colors are a little, you know, and then, but like as it rolled on and, you know, and then I gave my input and, you know, non-sugar coated, but you know, like after a couple of the people, it was like, it became an open forum where people were openly critiquing and openly taking the critique.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's something that I want to foster in these folks as well is, you know, even if nothing else is that you have this group of people that you can honestly ask them a question, you know, what do you think about this? And they will honestly tell you. It's not going to be mean. It's not going to be, you know, bitter or out of spite or whatever. It's just going to be like, you know me. And we're going to let's talk about this seriously. And I think that'll just be really a key, you know, tool for them to get better. So that's kind of something I'm wanting to foster and harness in them. And you know, by the end of it, everybody was like, oh, yeah, that's crap. Everybody did good. And they became very thoughtful about like really looking at, you know, the stuff and like, oh yeah. See how like, well, this color wasn't quite right. And it's, you know, it's similar, but not the same, you know, tone. And so then like started getting very specific and, you know, it was fantastic. It was great. And, you know, it was just at the end of it, nobody was butthurt. Nobody was feeling bad. And it was just ready to do it again.
Yeah. And are they doing this like at that towards the end of this weekend?
Yes.
So they're quite tired already.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
So that was like, that was kind of like the final, you know, at the end.
Yeah. So it's like, they've just done a few nights.
Yeah.
17 hour days.
And within that, you know, there was, you know, within the group, even starting Friday night, Saturday night, then through Sunday, everybody applied something probably 2 to 3 times a day, 4 times a day. So cool. It was, you know, process like transfer, it goes on quick, you know, paint it. And that way, you know, again, it's kind of like that muscle memory. You know, I want their hands moving before they know what they're going to do. And I think that that's doing it repetitively, you know, will create that. So, they, you know, they had a lot of good, you know, application time, sticky fingers, putting color down and, you know, and then swapping partners so that, you know, we had, you know, varying tones, you know, everybody could play with a new skin tone and try and figure out how that works. So I thought it was a lot of fun. I believe everybody else thought it was a lot of fun. I think the Tuesday, I think a lot of them, you know, they contacted me and just go like, oh my God, I just slept 14 hours. But, you know.
I love that. It's like, yeah, that's what you've got to do. You've got to catch up on your sleep and you've got to look after yourself in between these. Yeah. That's awesome. That's a term I need to use more as the muscle memory, because when I'm teaching my wig stuff, it's just like I'm always just like repetitive. You've got to just do it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
To understand it and get it. Like I can show you and we can do it a couple of times now, but you have to keep doing it.
Yeah. I mean, it's to get past that, you know, that fumbling fingers. It's just to get past that, yeah. You know, what am I supposed to do now? Your fingers should go up and under. I mean, you know, and again, at a point, it's second nature. It's like breathing.
Yeah. And then when the troubleshooting comes along, it's a little bit, you can kind of understand how to move forward.
Right. It's just a shift.
Because you've done it so many times.
Yeah. It's just a slight shift, you know. It's like, oh, okay, yeah. I can't do that for this one. But if I, you know, shift my point of view this way, it's like, oh, there's the spot. That's where I go in.
So, I mean, I'm just so happy that I reached out to you and that these guys got this opportunity, because it's just so awesome. I've had such amazing feedback from so many of the mentees, just so thankful for the opportunity to just have that time with somebody, even if it is just being able to ask questions or, you know, find out information that they never thought about, that they never thought to ask about. Because, you know, as a makeup friend of mine, Tina says, she's like, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
So it's just, I just love it. It's going to have to be an annual thing that we're going to have to do. And I just I need to find the energy to do that every year.
Yeah, to do some more.
It's so funny. I honestly thought you have this idea. It's just like, because I was involved in being a mentor during lockdown. And I was like, this is great. And then I thought, well, I'll sort this out and pair up some people. And then I started getting my mentors together. And then in the back of my mind, I was constantly doubting the whole situation, going, I'm going to have too many mentors and not enough mentees. This is going to be crazy. And then by the end of the application process, I had like 120 applications. And I was just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Trying to read through everything and look at everything, and just the pressure of like pairing people up. I was just like, oh my God.
So what was this is a lot. In the application process? Like, I mean, this is all like really like solely from people who listen to the podcast. That's how they found out? Or
it would be through the podcast, or, well, no, not really, because I didn't actually talk about it on the podcast at all. It was more through the podcast's Instagram page.
Okay.
So I guess through social media, because they would create a post with whatever videos or photos they wanted to use, and then they would tag us in it and just write in the caption a little bit about why they wanted to be part of the program, so why they wanted to be mentored. And I guess through that, people would share, like other artists or friends of them would see like, oh, what's this post? What's this about?
Yeah.
And then come to the page and people would share the page. Mentors that I had set up were kind of sharing the page to be like, hey, this is a thing. So yeah.
Okay. I was curious. Kind of, so, I mean,
It got out there.
Great. Yeah, I guess we'll see how it goes next year.
And it was like so heartbreaking, and I mean this is terrible, but I think it's just through me having this is such a bad thing to say, but it's like I have rescue dogs, and you know, and I foster, and I'm always just like, I just want to house all the dogs. Yeah. I just want to keep all of them, and that's what everyone, all these mentees, started feeling to me. I was just like, I need to find a home for all of them.
Yeah, I think that's what.
And I just felt so bad when, yeah, there were people posting afterwards that they didn't get picked, and I was just like, oh, I'm so sorry. But you know, there's always next year, and that's life. I mean, it's life.
It is, but. But how many people didn't get picked?
Oh, God. At some point, I did add up all how many people got picked and how many didn't, and I cannot remember off the top of my head whatsoever.
Yeah, like a third of the people got picked?
Pardon?
Maybe a third of the people got picked out of 120, 40 of them?
Yeah. And that's why at one point to my mentors, I was just like, if you could take more than one.
Yeah.
Well, think about it.
Yeah. And it's, well, especially, I mean, you know, here you go. Maybe like, we can help too, to like up the mentors' games. But I mean, especially if you just, you know, if you're keeping it to your initial criteria, I mean, that's pretty easy.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I was like, it's 4 hours over a couple of months.
They should have all taken at least 20 people then. I knew I was going to get 30. You know,
is that your next number next year? You'll be like, I'll take 20.
Add 10. depends. My garage is only so big.
Honestly, I was just like, I think Brian's lost his mind. I don't know what's happening.
Well, you know, part of it is like that thing where I was just like, well, you know, it's like if you have a kid, you know, you're just kind of like, well, if I have 10, then they can all play with each other and I can just, you know, go over here. You know? And maybe that's part of it. But again, I wanted, you know, a lot of it was just helping to create a team, you know, helping to create a tribe of people that, you know, you could really, you know, you can work with and trust, especially if some of these people are just getting into the business. It's like, now, look, these are 10 people that if you get a job, you know, just the people you can call on.
Yeah, we have a little community. It's awesome. Yeah. I love it. So I want to touch on a little bit about you and your work. What I just really want to know from you is a couple of your favorite projects and why. That you've worked on. And it can be anything from just one specific character that you created through to just the entire experience. Like, what couple of projects really jump out to you as, like, I don't know, look back in life and go.
I mean, you know, I guess to start off, I mean, obviously Guardians was a big fun one to work on. And, you know, part two, you know, David White had, you know, opened the door with his, you know, fantastic designs. And when it came to the States, you know, they hired local teams instead of bringing people over. So, you know, getting the opportunity to work on that show, redesign some of the makeup so that it was like more application friendly or removal friendly or longevity friendly, you know, was good. I mean, that was fun because it also just, it was a nice big broader range of characters that we got to play with. That was right after I had done X-Men, and you know, we were able to work about legacy effects, you know, just kind of, you know, hone in a lot of stuff as well as I created a third department. You know, I didn't want to be beholden to the makeup department who they hadn't hired yet, or the hair department who they hadn't hired yet. I'll have in my department, let's call it the legacy prosthetics departments. I've got prosthetic people, I've got beauty people, I've got hair people. One stop shop. You know, nobody gets out of one trailer, goes into another. It just, they sit in one chair and they're done, which for time management, that's, you know, can be huge because it's people wandering off to trailers or making phone calls in between or getting food. Yeah, you lose a lot of time in the mornings. That was a good big one. And, you know, it was a fun one to work on, you know, albeit tiring, lots of, you know, off clock hours.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a good one.
Have you been able to do that often since? Like, have the department, a third department that you cover all of those things?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was kind of the shtick that we did through all the Marvel movies that I did.
Yeah. Cause I think I remember that on Captain Marvel when you guys came in and you had your hair people to sort the hair out for underneath your ball caps and appliances and all that kind of stuff. And I was just like, oh, nice. Cause it was just like in our world, like we had enough going on. It was just like, okay, we don't need to deal with that. They've sorted it out.
Well, I mean, you know, it was just easier, I think, for me to do that way, you know, and the way, you know, that I help kind of arrange things with the ADs and the scheduling, you know, I mean, I can control then how that flow chart works. And actually, I like to have hair wrapped differently than most people. Like, you know, a lot of people sometimes just do like kind of like a dancer's rap, and I want to go further than that. So, you know, luckily I think all the Marvel movies, we did that. They liked that model. And it actually sort of started with X-Men in a way, because, you know, there was the hair department, there was the makeup department. But then with the effects departments, like, you know, we were, you know, Adrian Moreau was up there. He had, you know, he had his characters that he was doing. And then we had our characters that we were doing, you know, Mystique and Beast. And they just kind of, everybody left each other alone. You know, like, we didn't have, you know, Felix from hair or anybody from the makeup department, you know, coming over, like, you know, trying to, you know, pee on their tree and like tell us how to do our job or something. You know, like, yeah. Everyone just kind of knew, okay, well, you guys know what you're doing. Great. Because I've got, I got plenty to do over here. You know?
Yeah. We'll leave you to it.
Yeah. So,
see you later on set.
So I took that as kind of like the model to approach Marvel with that on Guardians.
Yeah.
And they loved it. So, yeah, you know, we got a chance to innovate a lot of things and just kind of move forward in a fun way.
Yeah. And was there another project that you wanted to talk about?
I mean, I guess, well, one of the things is there is a woman, Danielle Sansasi. He does a podcast as well. And you might have seen some things, too, that maybe posted on social media that I found out after doing an interview with her that she has a prosthetic leg.
Oh, okay.
And she was talking to me one day about like how painful it can be and how, like, she's like, you know, if you guys can do that kind of stuff in the movies and, you know, make fake people, make this and that, it's just like, how come we can't have something like that in our world? And, you know, and I see the legs and stuff that they make, you know, so technically they're pretty cool, but I mean, the cosmetic side of it, it's really quite horrible. It looks something, you know, worse than a mannequin's foot meets Barbie's foot. And so we're just starting on that. But my journey, I want her at the end of it to be able to wear a pair of sandals and a skirt and not feel that anybody's staring at her. So
you've looked at it and just, of course, with the way your brain works, you're just like, this can be better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was out here. Some of the mentees helped with doing leg casts, you know, when she came out and had to do that. So that was their first taste of my world, to getting the mentees involved. And, you know, while she was out here, you know, I made some adjustments to like the foot, the skin of the foot, gave it like some tread, gave it some cushion so that there was like a little shock absorber when she walks. And immediately she was like, oh, my God, this is amazing. You know, wow. You don't have like that clunk, 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 you know, when she walks, and it actually, it the gait of her walk changed. And it was really, I mean, again, I guess fulfilling is the word. You know, I talked to her after that about a week later, and I asked like how things were going, you know, because the material I used, I don't know what they make their foot sleeves out of, but I used a urethane to fix it, and it seemed to be, you know, biting and adhering itself, repainted it so it actually had texture and you know, tonal variation, and other than like paper brown mannequin skin. And after that first week, she was saying how like she had no back pain.
Far out.
And I talked with her yesterday, and it's been about 3 weeks, and she's still no back pain.
Wow.
And she had to, she had to give up one of her dreams was a few years ago, she opened up a hair and makeup salon. And after a couple of years, she closed it down because she just could not, the pain at the end of the day was so bad. You know, why can't we make something better than this? Because I'm looking at it and it's like a lot of money to make this, but it's, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. They're kind of the people that are designing and making them, probably their hands are reasonably tied most of the time because they're needing to make for.
Well, but you know, the thing is too, is that like none of the people building them, and not to say that I do, but none of the people wear them.
Yeah.
So you can hear people complaining about stuff that you've done, but unless you really are empathetic, you're not going to regard it. You know, so I'm sure they're just like, you know, some engineer guy who got stuck into this. He's like, yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, because again, technically, they seem like they're pretty cool. I mean, I think they could get dumbed out quite a bit and still be just as sturdy and be way more comfortable and way more inexpensive to make, you know, make it more people wear them.
Well, yeah, I guess that's the thing. It's kind of like it all comes down to money at the end of the day, doesn't it? It's,
well, I mean, I think things like that can be done for a fraction of the cost. You know, that's my goal, is to come up with something for her that will give her everything that she wants at not the crazy price tag.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's what a challenge.
Yeah. It will be, you know, of course, I've never done anything like that, but a lot of what we do and a lot of what I've done, you know, is, I think, similarly applicable. And I think, I mean, if nothing else, making the changes that I've had for her already, if that you know, helps change her life and that she doesn't have any back pain.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge. Yeah.
Sleep better tonight.
Yeah, that's very cool. I would just like to hear from you, just because we've been talking about the mentoring and mentees and everything. If you could just choose one piece of advice that you'd like to give people wanting to get into your line of work, what do you think it would be?
I guess one of the same things that I had told the mentees, same thing I mentioned it earlier too, is to be, you know, always be critical about what you're doing. Don't think that your shit doesn't stink, because it does, like everybody else. And you've got to be better, you know, every day, you know, just wake up and just, how am I going to do this better? It could be the day. It could be the job. It could be the relationship or how you're feeding your dog or, you know, how can you do it better?
Yeah, it's a good thing to just keep in the mind.
Yeah, I think people, it's so easy for people to get accolades and then settle in.
I did it.
And what did you do? You know, and you know, it's just like, are you done then? So, you know, roll over and die. I mean,
I said to somebody the other day, I was asking her, it was just like, at what point did you think that you kind of nailed the head of department role, like really understood how it goes? And she's just like, oh my God, I hope I never nail it. Like that, if that happens, I shouldn't be working anymore. She's just like, every job is different. I'm constantly learning stuff. Yeah. I never think I've got it sorted out.
Absolutely.
I was like, yep, that's the answer.
Although, or when you do feel that, then it's like, that's when like the, you know, complacency sets in, you know, it's like, or if you're at like a motorcycle, it's just like, you get on that motorcycle every day thinking like, I'm going to get in a crash. Mm. And if you keep that in mind, then you won't.
Well, you'll definitely be more careful, aren't you, and cautious.
You know, so it's a similar thing, I think. Different, same mindset, you know. I mean, mindset's everything. The direction of the way you think, you know. So switching them now from, like, I want to be in the union to I want to be really good, completely different.
And looking back, when you first started thinking as a teenager, that's the type of job that I'd want to do or what I want to get into, when you look back, how different is it than you thought it was going to be?
100% different.
Yeah.
I have no idea what to expect. You know, who knows, you know? You watch, you watch these movies where they do like the faux behind the scenes of some naked person touching somebody up and you're just like, oh, is that it? You know, no, you know, until you kind of get into it, you really just don't know what you're up for. But then again, that's kind of like, that's what kind of sorts out people too, is that the people who have the passion or the people who think it's going to be a cool job, people who think I'm going to make money, people that think I'm going to get an award or whatever it's going to be, you know, it all gets sorted out. And basically, I think at the end, you know, I mean, there's all political bullshit that happens with our unions and careers and everything, but it's just like, at the end, if you just keep your eye on just being, wanting to be good and just wanting to keep growing and be better and be better and be better, even if it's something you've already done, you can make it better, you can make it faster, make it more comfortable. And I think that's, you know, that's the goal.
Yeah.
And it transitions, it moves over into every aspect of life, you know?
Yeah. And I would say that anyone who keeps trying to love it and they don't, you move on.
Yeah.
It is not the industry that you want to, you know, give your life over to if you don't love what you do.
Not at all.
It's no.
I'm hiring.
Hey, so I feel like you're probably quite a MacGyver with things, but if I had you set up at your station, your workstation, and I came in and I took something away from you, whether it's a tool or a product, what would you get kind of pissed off with me about that you're like, no, I don't want to do my day without that? What do you not want to ever work without?
That's, I mean, good question. I mean, you know, I'm really, like the airbrush is one that I really like to use a lot, my Pache H. But you know what? You've just now made me think of another churn and burn weekend. Because, you know, we do go up to our stations and we all have, you know, you always tell 30, come on, I just need you for a day. You know, come in and do that. You don't have to bring anything. You can use my stuff. Yeah. Everybody else, you know, like me, I always bring the kitchen sink because it's just stuff that I use and what I'm comfortable with. But that actually would be good to make it something that it's like tools you've never used, tools that it's not supposed to be used for. And like, go, you know, here's a 1-inch chip brush, apply that makeup. But you know, I mean, I have my whole workstation. That's it.
Because,
you know, I have my tweezers. I do like, you know, like pick my sponges a certain way. I have locking tweezers that do a thing for me. And there's so many things that if you remove anything, it would be a bummer. But again, it's like focusing on being good. It's, you know, it's like the drummer who missed a beat, the whole band looks back and I'm like, what the hell just happened? Nobody in the audience knows. But in 2 seconds, they're back on track because they've just done it enough to know what it takes to ride that ship. And I think it might slow me down a little bit, but
but you'd work it out.
Yeah, but we've done things enough that we'll make it happen. You know, that's not my favorite brush, but I'll use this one instead. It'll be okay.
Yeah, I spoke to a hairstylist, Lawrence, a while back, and he was talking about that getting his actress ready, and then they, quickly jumped in the van and went to where they were going, and then he needed to comb out what he had done, and he didn't bring his comb with him. They had a green room, little kitcheny thing there, and he pretty much used a plastic to do what he needed to do. And it's just you just have to work it out. You have, that brain has to click into gear and just be like, fuck, what can I use that is even slightly similar to what I normally use.
Just like my comb, that's amazing, because that's the thing where you always want to get to that point where it's just, not what I'm used to, but I can make this work, and you do.
Absolutely. And my final question, what one person would you like to hear on the podcast?
What one person? George Washington. I'd like to hear what you have to say.
I can't do that.
You know what would be interesting? I don't know if you've done it. Have you interviewed any mentees?
No. I mean, I interviewed a couple, a hairstylist and a makeup artist who were working their way up, and just talking to them about their challenges and, all of those types of things of what they were coming up against and stuff like that. But mentees?
Yeah. No. I mean, it might be interesting to hear, it's like that pie in the sky, everything's going to be great and I'll be great kind of attitude that they all come in with. But just to kind of hear their thoughts on what they think they're coming into. I don't know. I don't know how, that would be kind of interesting before they get too deep into it. And then and then do another follow-up after a year.
So how's it going?
I think that's one thing is that in all of these type of podcasts you hear about all these people that have made it. What about the people like the people you maybe already interviewed where they're on their way or they want to make it? Are they how do I get in? How do I you've done this job as far as creating the mentorship, but hearing from them might be interesting too, or it's a forum, where there's mentees and mentors and they just kind of oh sweet child, oh, bless your heart. You have no idea what you're in for.
Yeah. I think it's definitely been, the podcast has been a great tool, I think, for those that are aspiring to get into it or have just started or, are midway through or whatever it is. I get so many wonderful messages from people just going, oh my God, I just love hearing that people are going through the same thing as me or that they've had a similar experience or just to hear about their challenges, that it's not always easy and, that it's all those types of things. And I even heard from someone who's been doing it for a while who went through a period of doing a couple of jobs that were really bumming her out. And she was questioning whether she wanted to keep going. And after she said that, just listening to a few episodes of the podcast just really inspired her to kind of just take a break and get back into it because it is what she loves to do.
That's great. I mean, it's awesome. But it'd be nice to, I think the one thing that's nice is to to hear people, even something like this, going back to the beginning of the interview when you're asking me questions about how I started, it sometimes can seem very, nebulous of how do I start? Is this a real thing? Can I do this? So it's just to not reach the people, not only talking to the people who have reached the pinnacle, but people who are still at it or still low and digging or wanting to begin, that's I would think that you could receive an attitude where it's they're just regular people like me. I can do that. Or, I don't have any artistic background, but I've got a great attitude and I'm very teachable and off I go. I mean, that's a big thing too. I think, that's something else, for one thing to tell people is have a great attitude, even at 2 a.m., you got to maintain that attitude and
don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick. I can teach people, I'd much rather have people around that know less, that, if you could be the most talented person in the world, but You know, if you're an asshole, I can't unteach asshole. I can teach something to somebody, but I can't unteach asshole.
Yeah. Very good. Brian, I'm so pleased that we got to chat again. Yeah, thank you. And thank you a million times for being a mentor. And you know that I'll be harassing you in a year's time to do it again.
Well, I mean, we'll have to see how that works because, you know, like I mentioned earlier on, I mean, you know, I'm taking this on as, you know, it's kind of like a lifetime thing. You know, I'm not going to stop taking phone calls or texts from these folks in a year. So
maybe you'll still be very busy with your 10 mentees from this year.
Then we add in 10 more and then, you know, then they can help me half teach them.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. Yeah,
thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay, Last Looks crew, thanks for listening. And remember, if you love it, share it. A quick scroll down and you'll find our show notes. Or maybe you'd like to give your support and leave a 5-star review. Go on, I know you want to. Search the Last Looks podcast on Instagram, Facebook, or TikTok, whichever one tickles your fancy. And a massive shout out to the husband, Brett Stanley. Without his patience and tech support, this whole podcast situation simply does not happen. And cheers to Liliana Rose for her fabulous voice acting talents. Okay, Last Looks crew, that's a wrap for me. I don't need to be told twice to get out of here. So bye. I'll catch you on the flip side.
That's a wrap, people.